Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Outdoor Equestrian Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Remy Kelbel, and today I got the opportunity to interview an author named Ken McAlpine. He's not only an author, but he is an incredible speaker, and he has done some work such as books about the ocean. They are fiction work, but I think they apply so much to today because of the environmental concerns associated with the book, and I think that's something important that we talk about. We not only talk about the importance of protecting the marine life, but how we are connected to the ocean. And so this is a really important episode because it goes along the topic of survival that I talked about earlier, and I think it's just really good. So thank you so much for tuning in today, and here you go.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for making the time on the Sunday.
Yeah, you're welcome. You too. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Well, the Alvarezes occupy a big piece of our hearts, so...
Yeah, that's so cool. I met Natalie last year when I went up to Fort Collins, so her and I are close.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we had have two boys. They're 28 and 26 now, but they were great friends with the Alvarez's son. So
okay.
We know Natalie too. So yeah, just when Frank said early on, yeah, Natalie has this friend and she's a wonderful journalist, and I said, I'm in.
Oh, so, yay.
Yeah. Your questions are great.
Oh, thank you so much.
Not your usual knockoff kind of, really good.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoy journalism.
Good. Yeah, I figure it's we only have one life. You might as well do what you love.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I admire how you've, decided what you want to do and you're pursuing it. I think that's terrific.
Thank you. So, I know that you're an author, and you've written many books, such as Juncture, Nexus, and A Year on the Edge of Civilization. So, tell me about how you grew up and how it led you to becoming an author and a speaker.
Sure. I've always, my father worked for the Foreign Service, and so we traveled the globe as a child. We lived largely in Asia, 4 years at a stint. So I got a chance, the travel bug came early.
Yeah.
And my father also was a lover of the ocean. So he, we were always either in the ocean, around the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And it affected my whole life. I mean, I fell in love with the oceans. I'm an avid surfer. I used to do a lot of diving. I actually have a book called Diving the World with underwater photographer Norbert Wu, who's on the same level as Brian Scarry.
Oh, wow.
Supreme talent. Unbelievable. Yeah. So, yeah, my whole life has sort of revolved around the oceans. And
Wow. Eventually,
if you're around something long enough, you start to learn something about it. And you start to realize that not everything is well with the oceans, and that's sort of the bottom line behind Juncture, Nexus, and there's a third book, Departure. It's a trilogy that part of the genesis of those books was what I was, and I'm no scientist, Remy. I won't pretend to understand every nuance. It's really complicated. I do a ton of research for all my books.
Mm-hmm.
I have a passing knowledge of what's going on, but things change so quickly, and new research reveals new things, which also makes it really exciting. But basically, I've always been in love with the ocean. I mean, I had, again, traveled a lot as a youngster, and then as a magazine writer, had a chance to go to all these different places around the globe, including a lot of dive assignments to places around the globe. So I got to see some of this firsthand. I mean, diving in Myanmar and hearing fish bombing, so I've seen and heard some of these things firsthand. So that helps too, because the ocean's like the great concealer, right? I mean,
yeah.
You look out, stand on the beach, and you look out and it's this beautiful place, and it is a beautiful place, but underneath the surface, there's a lot of things going on that a lot of us never see.
Yeah, and I think I like how you wrote your books, Junction and Nexus, because you see that importance in your books, like how we should take care of the oceans. And I don't think a lot of people are educated about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that I don't know, so I'm never critical. But I think it's, you know, we just go about our lives, Remy, and we all do this. And meanwhile, our lives have an impact on so many things, and the oceans in particular. And as the oceans go, so we go. I mean, and I think people sort of forget that. So with all the things that are sort of beleaguering the oceans, you know, eventually and soon now, I mean, experts are talking, the first book's called Juncture for a reason. We're actually at a juncture. You know, the decisions we make in the next 50 years could very well decide our future. You know, you got ocean warming and pollution and overfishing and ocean acidification. And, so I wrote these books, not, you know, first I wanted to write a story that would keep readers turning the page, but I also wanted to sort of subtly highlight the dangers facing our ocean, because our oceans are in peril, and we aren't heading in a great direction at the moment. And I didn't want to be preachy about it, but I wanted the readers to realize that there are difficulties and that we can, each of us in our own small ways, help. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good to always learn and be educated.
It is. I mean, that's one of the fun things I'm sure you find as a journalist, and I found as a writer, is that's half the joy. I mean, I've learned so many things because of writing and had to write, and you'll find this as a journalist, I'm sure you already have. I mean, I've written about everything from shoelaces for Runner's World to, I mean, you name it. You know, the white shark, diving with white sharks. I mean, it's an opportunity to see a little bit more than a lot of people get a chance to see, and to learn a little bit more. So yeah, I really enjoy that part of writing. And it's a fair bit of work too. I mean, but the research I enjoy, I mean, in researching these books, I learned a fair bit, and there's still, on a scale of 1 to 100, I'm at about a 10. There's still so much more to know. And things change day to day, as I said before. We're discovering new things every day, which is both exciting and unnerving.
Yeah, and we always evolve, and our education evolves over time. So you're always learning new things.
Right. That's exactly right.
So in your book, Juncture, I read that you teach people about how the sea animals have actually altered their behavior due to negative influences by man. So I thought that was really interesting, but tell me more about why that is.
Sure. I mean, it depends on what animals we're talking about. But it was interesting when I started writing the book, Remy, or just even thinking about the book, It was almost, you know how like when you buy a car and you never paid attention to that car before, and then all of a sudden you own that car and you start seeing it everywhere. So when I first started thinking about this book, it was interesting. As soon as I decided to write it, it seemed like almost every day in the news there'd be an article about some newly discovered behavior by some sea creature or some newly discovered creature entirely. Which happens, I mean, I think we discover 50 new species a day. And you always hear that sort of stat. I think it's like 95% of the ocean is hidden from us. We don't know what's there. So that's kind of exciting in itself. But, I mean, as far as the creatures changing, I mean, there's real things happening that are altering their behavior, either eliminating species entirely or actually making certain species adjust their behaviors. There's a scene in the book that involves Humboldt squid, and the short version is that Humboldt squid can get quite large, 6 feet, 100 pounds. They're fairly aggressive. sometimes, and they were once largely confined to the southern hemisphere, but now they're spreading into waters off of California and the Pacific Northwest and the Sea of Cortez. And scientists haven't yet pinned down the reasons for this sort of spread. They don't know if it's gradual ocean warming, whether it's pollution, whether we've overfished some of the squid predators. They're traveling further abroad because for their prey. I mean, there's that line in Jurassic Park, life finds a way.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they've also noticed things like their scientists have discovered that Humboldt squid actually hunt in kind of coordinated groups, which was a behavior never before associated with invertebrates. Scientists knew that they flash different colors, but they put these critter cams on them, and they saw that the squid sometimes flash these specific red and white color signals when they encountered an individual of their own species. So the scientists were hypothesizing maybe they're communicating. So what you have here is an aggressive, perhaps much more intelligent opportunist, and that I turned that into, you know, a scene in the book. And I actually was on a dive assignment, heard a story once, and this largely the scene on a book of a underwater photographer who decided to slip over the side of the boat in the Sea of Cortez to take some shots at night, and didn't tell anybody, and was basically swarmed by a squid. And they pulled his regulator out, pulled his mask off. You know, he fought his way to the surface, but it was a sort of startling encounter. It doesn't end as well for the fictional account. But the reality is, behaviors are changing everywhere, and a lot of it, the simple version is, and honestly, the simple version is the one I understand the best because I'm not a marine biologist, but life mm-hmm. finds a way.
Mm-hmm.
And if the species doesn't go extinct, they find a way to survive. Some of the adaptations are shocking.
Yeah. And I was talking to this National Geographic photographer, and he was saying that fishing in the ocean is actually really bad for the marine habitats and how
it
changes their behavior as well. I need to learn more about it, but it's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's the short version of the fishing thing is it's complicated, but most of the plant gets their food from the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And we're overfishing a lot of things. We're wiping out species, and then there's nets dragging across reefs and that sort of thing. We really have to pay close attention, or we're going to deplete a resource that once seemed undepletable. But, you know, they used to be able to, there were so many cod off the coast of New England that you could literally walk across them. I mean, obviously not literally, but there were, you know, countless schools of cod, and we've pretty much fished them out, and there's a million examples of that kind of thing.
Yeah, and then I know that there's this island full of trash. I think it's in the Maldives, but it's
okay.
It looks disgusting. It's so bad. And one of the adventure journalists that I follow in her career, she shows us pictures of this island that she goes through, and it's really devastating.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. I mean, plastics are a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're talking about collections of plastic, I mean, bigger than Texas, the state of Texas.
Yeah.
And that's complicated and a problem for a million reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the obvious ones is a lot of sea life consumes those plastics and either killed outright or pass them through the food chain. But there's also, you know, recent studies, I mean, 10% of the oxygen we breathe comes from this particular bacteria that's only found in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, basically one out of every 10 breaths of oxygen we breathe is a result of these bacteria. And they've just recently found out that this particular bacteria is particularly susceptible to plastic pollution.
Mm.
So, you know, if it, say, harmed this particular species of bacteria, there goes 10% of our oxygen availability, which is a pretty substantial amount. And that just goes to show you how small problems can lead to huge outcomes. But yeah, the plastic thing is so depressing. I mean, you know, plastics weren't even a part of our life. I can't even remember, but prior to like 1940 or something. And now they're ubiquitous. And we pick up something at the store and it's in this plastic container. We throw it in the trash and that trash goes on a barge mm-hmm. and it's dumped at sea. And I mean, many people are familiar with all that. So obviously there's decisions we can make as consumers to lessen that. And I'm an optimistic person, Remy. I'm listening to myself talk now and I sound like this real dour. I'm not, I mean, I really have tremendous faith in humanity. I think we can mm-hmm. accomplish anything if we put our minds to it. But mm-hmm. I think our problem is we don't sometimes think about things until it's too late. And small, we all know this, but small decisions that each of us make can have a huge impact. I mean, if everybody buys one less piece of plastic, you know, a day, it's going to have this big impact on the oceans. Or, you know, don't toss the plastic into a river because the river drains to the ocean, much less the river's health. I mean, just small, simple things that can make a huge difference. But I would love to see the links to those pictures if you have them handy. But those collections of plastic, mm-hmm. they're everywhere and they're mm-hmm. massive. Yeah. In some instances. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's really bad. And, you know, I believe in God, and a lot of religious people will say, well, they don't really believe in environmental concerns, which is odd to me, because I believe in God, and while, you know, some people don't believe in that, I just think that's a huge concern, because there's a huge problem going on that so many people aren't educated about. And it's not just in the ocean, it's throughout.
Right.
Everywhere.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly true. Full disclosure, I haven't figured out the God thing yet, I'm not sure, but if there is a God, and I'm kind of hoping it's a she, because they make better decisions than men, generally, but you know, the ocean is the cornerstone of Earth's life support system. It shapes our climate, our weather, holds most of life. Mm-hmm. And it's insanely, if it was created by God, it's this insanely beautiful, fragile, resilient world. And we're by no means separate from it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I whoever created it, it's a gift.
It is.
And we're not taking care of that gift.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I know that I learned in class the ocean provides half the world's oxygen, which I didn't know before. But now the ocean has been so polluted over time because people aren't very educated about it. So how does that polluted oxygen affect us as humans in our daily lives?
Well, again, they're still figuring a lot of that out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the example I gave earlier, which is, again, sort of surprising, this tiny little bacteria that nobody probably paid any attention to except for the scientists, you know, is responsible for producing 10% of the oxygen that we breathe. And so, literally, 1 out of 10 breaths that we take is due to this bacteria that nobody really is aware of except for researchers. And it's susceptible to plastic pollution. In other words, it's you know, plastic pollution harms this bacteria, and this bacteria is disappearing because of it. So, I mean, there's probably 1,000 other examples, but that's a pretty gripping one, and that 1/10 of the air we breathe is really in the hands of this tiny microorganism. You know, it's not as if the plastics are leaching into the atmosphere and then we're breathing plastic, but we're polluting the oceans at a rate that's absolutely terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, probably one of the biggest contributors to human life is the, like you said, the oxygen that the oceans produce.
Yeah.
So, and that and the food source. I mean, mm-hmm. breath is the first thing.
Yeah.
Sustenance is the second. And we're we're harming the very thing that keeps us alive.
And, you know, I think education is super important, but I wish that schools would teach more about things like what you and I are talking about, because they don't really teach that a whole lot, or if they do, it's a very specific thing that you have to do to, in order to take stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of people don't know about what we're talking about. So I think it would be interesting for teachers to learn about that and teach students, or however they want to go about teaching, more about environmental concerns.
I think that is brilliant. That would be fantastic. I mean, you had reading, writing, arithmetic, and environment.
Yeah.
It would be wonderful. And just the basics. I mean, you're exactly right, Remy. That's really astute. But these sorts of things are generally the realm of somebody who goes into becomes a biology major, or marine biology major, or, you know, sort of a niche kind of thing. But it's not really, if they had some kind of, and maybe they do, I've been out of school for a long time, but I'm thinking even it's like the grade school, my wife was a teacher for years, and she, you know, taught the kids many things outside of the basic reading, writing, arithmetic, which I think really made the world a better place.
Good,
but
yeah.
If there was a way to introduce that into a curriculum at an early age, just the basic stuff, you know, the oceans are responsible for most of the air we breathe, and look at how beautiful they are, too. I mean, I think that's the best way to come at it, in my opinion, is to show what an insanely beautiful, I mean, I've had a chance to dive in some of the most beautiful places in the world, and when all is right, it's beyond words. I mean, it makes me think maybe there is a God, because it's just something so far beyond us that it's ungraspable. But I think that would be brilliant. I mean, people just, and it's not their fault. There's so much. I mean, they're consumed with making a living and making a life and supporting their families. You know, kids maybe are preoccupied with other things, but if we could just introduce them to the basics and they were just aware, that would make so much more difference. I think that would be to introduce it into a school curriculum early and have somebody, even like, you know, there's a huge group of people like Brian Scarry, I mean, who could come into a classroom and change a kid's life. I mean, you know, speak knowledgeably, show them pictures. That would be absolutely wonderful, because it's the next generation that's going to save us or not save us.
Yeah. And then, you know, half of what I learn is from people who work for National Geographic, like Paul Nicklin. And he taught me about, like, the Arctic regions. He does photography there. So he took this photograph of a polar bear, and it was emancipated, really, really hungry because of the climate change. It couldn't get food. And so I think so many people, you know, that's not taught in class, and that's not taught at our schools, really. And if it is, it has to be a certain niche. So, and I think especially as a journalist, I should know things like that, you know?
Right. And then you can spread the word. I mean, that's actually probably the best thing, I think, about being a writer or a journalist, is the ability to, and not in a bang people over the head way, but to get the information out. I don't want to say to teach people, because that sounds kind of pompous. And assumes that we know everything, and I certainly don't.
Yeah.
Every day I realize how little I know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, to get the accurate facts out. You know, again, I think it's so easy to get wrapped up in our day-to-day lives. I know I do. And we forget about our impacts on the world around us. And, you know, our species has traveled this inconceivable distance beyond the taming of fire. But that doesn't make us separate from the world around us. And I think sometimes we forget that, and that people, you know, like Brian Scarry and Nicklin, you know, one photo is makes such a dramatic case. And I think if not seen that photo, I've seen photos of starving polar bears.
Yeah.
That's us. We're responsible for that.
I know.
Right.
Yeah, it's really sad. And, you know, I learned about how to recycle properly, and I'm still learning about that. But it surprised me how, you know, I thought I knew how to recycle, and then I realized that I didn't. And a lot of people don't, you know? So there are these certain ways that we need to learn about what we're doing day to day to help each other.
Right. Yeah, and that's it. Help each other. That's exactly right. And I mean, one of the many wonderful things about this age, and you know better than I do, Remy, because you're, I'm sure, a lot more technologically astute, but even the simple version is we have so much information now at our fingertips that it's not hard to learn these things. I mean, you got to make sure that you're on a reputable site and blah, blah, but, you know, you can Google, you know, how do I recycle? Because some things are complicated. You know, it's not just a simple matter of separating the paper from the plastic. It's a little more than that. But it's certainly, and I don't know that much about it. I mean, we do the best we can, and I still need to learn. But it's just a simple matter of, one, being aware, two, caring, and three, being informed. So that's a great point. Yeah. And again, it's all small stuff. And if we all do it, it becomes very big stuff.
Yeah. Which is good, because then we keep on learning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I know that you have been diving with white sharks. So, what has that experience taught you, if anything?
Yeah, it's funny. That was kind of a dream, Remy. It's something that I always wanted to do. Again, I spent my whole life around the ocean. And I think they're one of the most beautiful and misunderstood creatures on the planet. You know, Peter Benchley wrote the book Jaws, and then, you know, it was a huge success, and then he spent the rest of his life trying to lessen the damage he did with that book, which was portray sharks as mindless devourers of people, which isn't true at all. You know, I mean, you hear all the statistics, the odds of being attacked by a shark, or, you know, far more chance of being killed by pigs, by lightning, even by soda machines. I mean, shaking a soda machine, more people are killed by soda machines. I mean, it's crazy. So anyhow, the trip to that I got to see, I'd go to a place called Guadalupe Island, it's this little rock way off of Mexico. And it was, they're just astonishingly beautiful creatures. And again, I'm not a scientist. I don't know all about their behavior. There were scientists on the boat, and so we learned a great deal from them. But the short version is they're a magnificent creation, perfectly suited for their environment. Generally quite, I mean, there's really no danger. It's much more dangerous driving to the airport to fly to Mexico to take this trip. And very oddly curious, when we were in the water, we're in cages, and we could actually, if you were a diver, they actually drop the cages, you know, 60 feet down. You could get out of the cage and stand on the top. They didn't want you swimming away from the cage because, you know, there's still predators and you don't know.
Yeah.
But it was really interesting. The sharks were really curious about us, and they would come. It is a little disconcerting. I mean, you're standing on top of the cage and 15-foot thing sort of is off 70 feet in the distance, and then it sort of swings around, and that iconic look that you've seen that, you know, unfortunately strikes terror in a lot of people's hearts comes swinging towards you. But they're also very cautious, and they never got close, but there was almost a sense that they were curious about you. And they're survivors, and that's why, I mean, you're probably familiar with this, but, I mean, attacks are, A, rare on humans. They're big, and we're not their traditional prey, for starters, often mistaken identity. So, anyhow, that trip drove home many things that I already knew, but one of them was just that they're this magnificent creature, and we're so blessed to be able to share this planet with something like that.
We are. And there's a lot of misinformation about sharks. You know, I get storytelling, because I'm a storyteller. I love storytelling and writing. But I think we should, you know, if we write stories on sharks, we should do it in a way that's more informative than scaring people, you know, away from them, if that makes sense.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, there was, like I said, Peter Benchley regretted Jaws.
Yeah.
For his whole life. And not to be overly dramatic, but he really did spend the rest of his life writing articles about the truth about sharks, which mm-hmm. is that, you know, we kill far more sharks, hundreds of thousands more sharks than, you know, sharks turning the table on us. I mean,
yeah.
And there's brutal, you know, you're probably familiar with shark finning, where they just cut the fins off.
Yep.
And then there's actually a scene in Juncture or Nexus, I forget, but where there's shark finning going on.
Ugh.
And that's about as cruel as it gets. The mm-hmm. sharks sink to the bottom, they can't swim, and they're still alive, and they just slowly die.
So sad.
And that's all to provide shark fins in a soup that basically just adds consistency to the soup. Probably not even necessary. So, again, it's, sharks are much... I'd be a lot more afraid of man.
Yeah. And I talked to this one ocean conservationist. She works for TV networks like Discovery Channel, National Geographic, Travel Channel. And her name is Kinga Phillips. And she actually watched Jaws as a kid, and she was terrified of sharks, and she didn't even live near the ocean, you know? But through that experience, she got interested in what sharks were really like, and now she's a ocean conservationist, and a, you know, she's a journalist for environmental issues, and she does other incredible, like, adventure stories. But yeah, I really look up to her, and I hope to be where she is one day or work with her. She actually helped me get an internship at Discovery Channel.
Wonderful.
Yeah, which is amazing. And she's hosting a show on Shark Week this year. And she sent me behind-the-scenes footage of that and what she's doing and how she wants to focus more on environmental concerns for the series, for the sharks. So, yeah. She's a really nice person. I really like her, and she's been very valuable to my education.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of story is exactly, and that you astutely hit on that earlier. I mean, all you need to do is be exposed to those sort of things. I mean, that movie terrified everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so well done, the opening scene in particular, but... it was scary, and I think, you know, people in New Jersey, you know, got out of their cars at night and ran at the front door. I mean, you know, the odds of being attacked by a shark were slim, but it was that dramatic. But it also did drive people like her, Kinga, to do their homework and to discover that that's not the way it is, and then to promote, you know, a little more accurate picture of sharks. And, you know, that goes all the way back to your idea of having just like a basic sort of environmental course for kids. And maybe that would be part of it, that these animals are not to be feared. They're to be respected, but they're, you know, they're amazing. I mean, they're odds are they'll outlive us. But anyhow, that's so interesting to me that took her on a path of good. And you're in that same position. You know, you're going to be able to, you're young, you get accurate information out there, you can change the world.
Mm-hmm.
The pen is often mightier than the sword.
Yeah, exactly. So for my last question, what do you think has been one of the most valuable lessons or multiple lessons that you've learned through your travels?
Yeah, I mean, that's your questions are great.
Thank you.
Was a complicated one
for
so many reasons. I mean, I've had a chance to travel the world, and there's been all kinds of things that were impactful outside of the environmental issues, because 99% of the stuff that I wrote about was not really environmentally oriented. It was often traveling to remote places, but environment was part of that because they were beautiful places. But you know, with regards to the topic that we're talking about, I think the takeaway was that it's a beautiful, fragile, resilient world.
Mm-hmm.
And we're by no means separate from it. And we are responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it shouldn't be that way, but we've evolved to be sort of, you know, probably the most intelligent species on the planet. Or sometimes you wonder, but and again, I have great faith in people. But yeah, the short version is, it's a beautiful world, and we need to take care of it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Ken.
Well, my pleasure. Sorry there was some back and forth. And
no, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you need anything else, let me know. And
mm-hmm.
I would love to see the Maldives photography, or link to that if it's possible.
Yeah, I will.
But otherwise, just let me know if there's anything else that you need. And thanks for caring.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for teaching me about your travels and what you do and about the oceans a little more.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm not the last word, but like you and I both know, it's a chance to learn so much, and the things that we care about, we learn a little bit more about.
Yes.
So, thanks. Yeah. Okay, well, enjoy your day, and thanks for your time.
Okay, you too. I will keep in contact, and
I would love that. I want to hear what you're doing. Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, I'll show you a little more on Kinga Phillips, and hopefully I'll get that Discovery Channel internship next summer.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I'd like to hear about that. I'm thinking you will.
Yeah. Okay, well, you have a good day.
Thanks, you too, Remy. Enjoy your day, and thank you again for your time.
Okay, you too.
All right.
Bye.
All right, bye.
All right, guys, that was my interview with adventure author and speaker Ken McAlpine. I really appreciate his viewpoint, and I loved learning more about the ocean. As you know, that's not something I know a lot about, but I love conservation work, and I really hope to work as a journalist on Shark Week one day. So thank you so much, guys, and I hope you all are well. I got in contact with a few people I really think you're going to like for the next few episodes, and one of them in particular is a man from I Shouldn't Be Alive, so he's going to share his survival story with us, and it's a big one, but I am excited. He got stuck in an ice crevice, and it's a big story, but, you know, you overcome it somehow, some way, and I'm excited to share that with you guys. So stay tuned for that and all the episodes that are coming soon. So thank you so much, and have a good day.